Hi everyone, I am Coach Lizzie. Thank you for your patience. As I was getting on, I was on a different Zoom and I was like, I'm the only one here. So anyway, I'm so glad all of you are here. Give me a second while I get connected to everybody and see who else is here. And when she gets a chance, we'll get Coach Ashley to raise her hand. Hey, Linda and Amy. We got all kinds of folks are here. We've got Coach Ashley. Thanks you so much for being here. We're going to promote Coach Ashley. So, hi everyone. We are here for open coaching. It's live coaching tonight. I am so grateful to be here again. My name is Coach Lizzie, and I just am so glad that you're all here with me. And if you would like to be coached, please raise your hand and we can start chatting and get talking. So, just a quick reminder, if you wouldn't mind putting your chat to everyone instead of hosts and panelists, and everyone can see your chat and we can all chat with each other. Coach Ashley's going to be there in typing in all caps. And we're just so thrilled that we get to hang out tonight, talk about all things life, weight loss, family, relationships, whatever goes. So if you want to get coached, let's get to it. I'm going to go ahead and raise Linda to get coached and we'll get after it, right? Yeah, here we go. Thank you so much for being here, everybody. Happy Tuesday. So whenever you get a chance, Linda, if you could unmute and start your video. Let's see. Was my volume really low? My volume's really low. Try again, Linda.
Shows that I have them both open.
Yeah, it looks like you've started your video, but it's black. So it's possible there's something blocking your camera, but I can hear you now. So if oh, there
Oh,
you are.
hi.
So great to
It's so
see
nice to see you.
you. Thank you for being here. What do we want to coach on tonight?
Weight loss. I was
Okay.
listening to one of the shorts that Corinne had done, and it just sounded like me for a while, but then she kind of veered off. So, as I heard, felt like me. It's I know that when you come up in your head with a challenge, like I want to have some of that because he's have some of them, and I used to feel like I deserve it. But I've talked myself through that I deserve it. But then I've come to this place where it's like the girl in the other coach and said, it's like you come to a blind wall where you're like saying, okay, I don't want to eat this. I know I don't want to eat this, but I want to eat this. And then I give in. And then, like I've heard someone say before, it's kind of like a panic where you just, and she was saying, how do you get past that and make yourself be good, but not good, but make yourself follow the plan you had in the beginning? It's like my husband's a nice help. He can stop me if he, and I want to have him stop me when I'm doing that, but I should be able to ask him to help me before he has to be the one to realize I'm not in control of what I'm doing right. But is there anything you can suggest that might help me?
Thank you for asking this question. And I think what you're saying resonates with a lot of people who are listening. I see this a lot in as coaches, where it's like, I have a plan, I know what I want to do, but then when the time of day or usually evening comes around, and morning me had a great idea, and evening me is like, I do not care, just not interested. And so when you mentioned that kind of like fast eating, that is an interesting indicator. Not always, but sometimes when you notice you're eating fast, almost like I kind of like liken it to hyperventilating a little bit, like I have to get it in real quick. That is a sign that your nervous system is a little bit out of whack. Sciencey people would say like you're feeling a little bit unsafe. And so kind of what's going on in your brain is your brain's probably saying, hurry up because she's going to shut us down real fast. So we need to eat as much as we can until she tells us we've been bad. Before I keep going, does that resonate at all? Or like, no, nah, that's not really what I'm feeling.
Yeah, that does.
Yeah. Okay. And first, I just want to say, like, you're not alone. A lot of us feel that way. So sometimes the habits that we want to change are that are really sticky, that are really tough to change. They're hard to change because they might be wrapped up in really powerful emotions like love, comfort, or safety. So, like our higher brain is like, I have these long-term goals. I want to lose weight. And the lower brain is like, I have one goal, and it is safety. And the lower brain will choose safety over anything else. And if this food is a source of safety, then your brain is really not going to want to give it up. Is that resonating at all? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that safety is underneath it all. My husband and I are in a very safe and good situation, so it's nothing like that. But as a child, I wasn't unsafe in the way of being abused, but my dad was an alcoholic, so even though he was a really, really nice guy to, when he would drink, he would feel it would like once a week or whatever, it would feel like I never knew. And I grew up kind of feeling like I had to stay there. I couldn't go down to the lake and play. I couldn't go to my friends. I had to kind of stay in this close area to protect my mom, which again, mentally, I don't know if I ever saw her being safe, but in my mind, and like at night, would usually get home by 5 or 6 in the evening. But if he was on a drinking night, he might not get there till 9 or 10. And then it was like, even our dog would know. He'd like sneak around the corner and look instead, because usually he'd come bounding out. But he knew enough that if my dad was in a drinking time, he better just go back under the table or get himself kicked, that kind of thing. But so yeah, that little girl feels unsafe, the little one way down inside, even though things around me are feel safe all the time. I don't know, and again, that's one of those thoughts. I'm trying to level up my thought to telling that little girl that she's safe and doesn't have to ever worry about that again. But somehow it seems to surface at different times. And I might not even know why.
100%. And thank you for sharing that. And I love that you mentioned your dog, because that's sometimes an analogy that I use that like our lower brain is this is a very rough estimate, but about like the maturity level of a dog. So here's an example. I have a rescue dog. Her name is Mrs. O'Leary, and she is so sweet and so loyal, but a little skittish. Like, we don't really know exactly what went on when before we adopted her. And when fireworks go off on the 4th of July, like many dogs, she is afraid, but she will hide in the corner of the bathroom shivering. I know she's safe. I can reason with her all night long, being like, Mrs. O'Leary, you're fine. Come on out. That is not going to help. And that's me, like my higher brain, trying to talk to my dog on a rational level. That's not going to work. That's kind of like what our bodies are like that sweet dog. And similarly, like what you would need to do to soothe a dog that is afraid of fireworks is, get down on their level, speak really quietly, pet the dog, et cetera. And that's kind of what's going on in our bodies, is that like our lower brain is freaking out, whether it's a real threat or not. And in order to allow your body, your lower brain to feel safe, you got to kind of meet it where it's at. And so that's a lot of what is talked about in the Trusting Your Body course and the Trusting Your Body toolkit of those somatic safety tools. And so when you're noticing this sort of like quick eating, almost like hyperventilating, like I got to get it in quick, that is a sign that your lower brain is feeling unsafe, like fireworks are going off. Whether you're actually in danger or not, it doesn't matter. Your lower brain is like, I'm a little bit I'm like Mrs. O'Leary in the, shivering in the bathroom, and you got to meet your body where it's at and be like, it's okay, honey. We're okay. We're okay. I have a list of a couple of, safety resume. What's the word I'm looking for? Tools that you can use to create safety in your body. Would you like us to talk about those? Are you familiar with any of those at all?
Well, I'm familiar with the hold your hand over your heart, try to breathe appropriately,
Yeah.
slowly. That's about it.
Yeah. And to be honest, like I've known about some of these somatic body tools for some time and thought about like those are nice. And to be honest, I was like, yeah, they're cute, but like I don't actually do them. And it wasn't until I learned that when we have a fight or flight response, the body diverts resources away from your brain to your body, to like your heart, muscles, lungs, to run away from the tiger, which means you cannot think your way out of a response like that. So again, when you're in that sort of quick, almost hyperventilation type of eating, it's not the time to like do a discovery worksheet and be like, well, let me do the four N's right now. The four N's are amazing. But that's a time where like you cannot think your way out. You've got to meet your body first and be like, we're okay, we're safe. Let those resources go back to your brain, because that's kind of like engaging that part of your nervous system that's like, I'm not actually running from a tiger. I'm okay. Then you can do the four N's. Then you can do a discovery worksheet and so forth. So the hand on your heart is an amazing tool to create safety and just kind of take a couple deep breaths. I am safe. Another tool that I learned of quite recently is something called havening. And it's you take your hand and you touch your body anywhere else, like on the other hand, on your shoulder, anywhere else. And you just kind of like, just sort of do this rubbing. And what you're doing, and then you want to think, what does it feel like in my fingers to touch my hand? So you're focusing on the feeling in your fingers. And then you shift your focus to what's the feeling in that area that is being touched, whether it's my hand or my shoulder. And so it's your brain is like, what is this feeling? But in two different parts of my body. And it's a little kind of a cross brain thing where basically what's happening is your brain is like, if I have time to sit there and feel like, what does it feel like in my hand? And what does it feel like in the other part of my body that's being touched? I'm probably safe enough that I'm not running from a tiger. And that triggers that safety response of like, oh, I'm okay. And then you can breathe. That can give you a moment to be like, this is a food that I'm eating because I feel a sense of scarcity, because I'm afraid it's going to go away. That can give you a minute to kind of pause. Before I go on, what are your thoughts so far?
I really like the idea of the touch that makes sense in the brain. I think, the nervous system has to shift or something. We're just, I think that's a good thing. I use that
Sure. Another
too.
easy tool to create safety in the body is tune into one of your senses. Let's just say sight. I was talking to my son about this today. He's colorblind, so it's like, what's the color you can see? He's like, yellow. I said, great. Look for all the things you can see in your line of sight that are yellow. And what this does, same kind of thing, is like if I'm looking around, well, that's yellow, and you're sort of diverting your attention away from like whatever the freak out is. It's signaling if I'm safe enough to look for seven things in the room that are yellow, I'm probably not getting chased by something. And so it sort of settles the body down. You can do that with any of your senses. What do I see? What do I hear? What do I smell? It's kind of a grounding technique.
The explanation that you just gave about it changing the body inside, getting the blood back, that makes a lot of sense
Yeah.
to why it would change things.
And I just really want to validate that feeling of like, I don't want to eat, but I find myself kind of almost eating against my will. And then I'm almost eating really fast. That's really normal. It's your brain trying to protect you.
And there's the other part of it that I fight, or it's one of my problems, is It's like I, and I don't need to sneak, but I feel like I'm sneaking and kind of like do it over here, or
Yeah.
quick.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have any.
I love that you mentioned that. And like I said, there are some habits that are kind of wound up in those really powerful emotions like love, comfort, and safety. And when that happens, you can't just tell your brain, well, we're not going to have it tonight. Because your brain is like, oh, that's no, it's my safety. It's my woobie. It's my security blanket. What you can do in that case is you kind of like treat your brain really gently, and you can practice using the Fuck It Foods worksheet, which is basically a worksheet that allows you to have whatever the food is, but you do it slowly and you're paying attention and you're like, is this bite more, the same, or less satisfying than the last bite? And so that kind of slows you down. You're not telling your brain you can't have it. You're saying like, no, we can have it. We're just going to have it in a way that I'm paying attention. And so that satisfies that safety piece, but it also calms down that sort of secret hustle, hoovering sort of mentality. How does that sound to you?
That sounds really great. And I appreciate so much you helping me. And I know there are other people waiting in line. So thank you very much.
Oh, Linda, you're so welcome. I really appreciate you raising your hand, and so great to meet you. Thank you for being here tonight.
Okay, thank you too.
Thank you. Okay. Great. Well, it was so great to talk with Linda. We're going to see if Elizabeth is able to join us, and we'll take it from there. That was so good. Y'all, Coach Kathy has been doing a course on somatic, but coaching and body tools and so forth. And I've really come to a new appreciation of kind of respecting the body's response. It really is a mind-body connection. And so much good stuff there. So Elizabeth, hi, it's great to meet you.
Hi, it's nice to meet you. I had a couple of questions. So I joined No BS in the fall after losing weight on a different program. I was following a no flour, no sugar, except for some exceptions, and got down to my target weight and then kind of joined No BS to help maintain it. And I found that ever since I did that, little by little, as I started adding more flour and sugar, I've had a lot of overeats to where it's not quite a binge, but it's definitely overeating a large amount, pretty much of sweets. It hasn't really been flour, it's just been sugar. And I did that again today, and I'm trying to break that. And I'm not sure if I should plan it more frequently, the sweets, or how to do that. But what has me worried is I kind of tried to figure out a target weight. And I had about a 5 pound range, and I'm now I hover about a half a pound to 2 pounds above that. And maybe that should be part of my range. I don't know. Maybe I was too restrictive with the weight I had because now with more of the carbs, I think I'm just holding on to more water. But I'm going on a 2 week trip to Costa Rica in about 5 days. So I'll have less control over my food. I definitely want to try the foods and, have the fresh fruit juices and things like that and enjoy the treats. So I don't know quite how to do that without and making sure I don't come home with this huge weight gain because I have basically maintained this weight for about 4 months. And so I want to keep that up.
Gotcha. Well, congratulations on the success you've had already. Tell me about flour and sugar. What in your sort of ideal world, how would you what would you be your English? What would be your relationship with flour and sugar in your sort of mental ideal world?
So I like the increased energy and the improved mood that I've had since I've really limited it. But I have started adding it back mostly, just tortillas for fajitas. I eat Ezekiel bread, but I don't really consider that flour since it's not really ground. But I do little bits. So it's really, I've just added it back in terms of sweets, which I love.
Okay.
And so I don't
So,
want to stop that, although I do notice when I eat too much of it, then I get tired. So,
okay.
like, I great today, and I definitely feel now, I feel like I need a nap, but I ate like four servings instead of one serving.
Okay. So what I'm hearing you say is, flour is a little bit of it, but it's mostly sweets. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I want to add back and occasionally have pasta and things like that, but that's not what I crave. What I
Okay.
really, always been a sugar person.
Okay. So ideally, what kind of relationship would you have with sweets? How often would you have it? How would you feel about it? That kind of thing.
I'd like to go ultimately back to how I was before I gained the weight. So I gained it over about slowly over about 5 years. Before that, I never had an issue. And I would just eat when I wanted, eat what I wanted. I actually ate a lot of sweets then, but I could just control my eating and I wouldn't eat as much for emotions. And then I had a child and was busy and tired, and then COVID hit. And so eventually I'd like to go back to how I was years ago, where it wasn't even something to think about. But I know I'm a ways off from that.
Okay. Thank you for explaining that. So it sounds like you went on this no flour, no sugar diet to lose the weight, and you're trying to work it back in a way that you're not relying on sugar and sweets in it for emotional eating purposes. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah, I think when I cut it out through a program, it really got rid of the cravings. So I had energy, I didn't get as hungry, and I just didn't. When I cut it out completely, they had us cut it out for about 6 weeks. All of the cravings went away.
Okay.
So it was great, but I don't want to live my life without it.
And how, so now you find yourself bringing it back in, but you're overeating it?
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
And like, I think, oh, well, if I'm on Facebook, it's now showing me pictures of all these recipes of desserts. So I'm staring at them. So it just keeps showing me more.
Interesting. So, when you eat them and you're overeating them, kind of like the last caller with Linda, are you eating them in like a conscious, proactive, intentional way, or is it more, I got to get it in quick before I catch up?
When I first started adding it in, and I was just having it maybe once a week, once every 2 weeks, it was very planned, controlled, slow, and enjoyable. And since I've started overeating it, I'll start slowly, and then it becomes this frantic thing. Like I definitely see that it becomes frantic, but I don't know that I'm specifically, worried, fearful, anything like that.
Okay. Are you aware at all of like what changes from this? I'm eating it slowly, methodically, to something's different. Now I'm eating it frantically.
I don't know. Today it wasn't even planned. I had a lunch from work that came with a cookie that usually I just give to my daughter and I don't eat, but I just decided to eat it. It wasn't even that good, so I probably should have stopped or thrown it away, but I ate it. And then I think I just felt like, oh, I want a little more sweet. So then I ate some leftover Easter candy, and then it just became, yeah, the sort of frantic. So it
Okay.
started slow.
Okay. I could be wrong, but I'm guessing that there's some sort of restriction thinking in your brain, that your brain perhaps remembers no sugar, no flour. And while that worked and the cravings went away, there's part of you that's like, I don't want to live my life that way. And so part of your brain is like, if we're getting some, we're going to go for it.
But I think my mind was thinking, I know that whenever I eat the sugar, then my weight goes up by a pound or two the next day. Even though I don't eat a full pound or two of sweets, it goes up pretty quickly. And the program I did taught me to weigh myself daily, and I like it. So I've continued to do that. So I think that was part of it, is once I started eating in, I thought, oh, my weight's going to go up tomorrow. Well, I might as well have some more. And some more, because then I can't do this again because I'm going on a trip and I don't want my weight to be up on the trip. So I better eat it now because I won't eat it the rest of the week, was sort of what was in my mind, I think.
Thank you so much for explaining that. That, illuminates some things that your brain is thinking as you're eating the sugar, the dessert. You're not just eating it, you're also feeling like, and this is going to have negative repercussions on the scale tomorrow. So I'm eating it with guilt. That's like my side serving of guilt. Yeah. And then there's also the trip coming up in 5 days of, so not only am I eating my dessert with a side serving of guilt, but I've also got this sort of looming, you know, better enjoy it now because we need to get, you know, get it out of our system. Is that resonating?
Yeah, it is. And I'm just kind of worried because now I feel like I'm going into this vacation at a weight that has me a little anxious because it's already a little over my goal. So I would love to not bring a scale, not weigh myself on vacation, but I'm kind of scared to do that because I don't want to come back and then find out I've gained, you know, 5 or 10 pounds that now I have to go back to more of the planning the food and being so careful on stopping at enough and doing all those things that I was doing before.
Yeah. Well, we can definitely talk about how to go into vacation in a mentality and a mindset that serves you and how to come back either at the same weight or, you know, having not gained. But that before you go, there's that sense of, if I have X tonight, that's going to have Y implications on the scale tomorrow. And I think that's right. Kind of messing you up a little bit.
Okay.
So one thing that I was talking to a client about recently that I was able to finally articulate was long-term weight loss happens when your mindset switches from I'm doing XYZ in order to get a result. And it goes from that to I'm doing XYZ because I like it.
Okay. So
I'm living my life this way because I like it, because I can sustain it, not because of what it will or won't do on the scale tomorrow.
Okay. So
for example, with your chocolate, you're like, I'm having some chocolate because I like it and I can have 2 pieces and be good. Not because 2 pieces is what's, you know, going to affect the scale versus not affect the scale. It's because this is the lifestyle that I like. Conversely with, you know, other types of foods. Before I go on, how is that landing for you?
No, it lands. I think it sounds like you're saying, you know, when I'm eating it, when I try to reach for more, say, you know, is this something I really want? Because if I continue eating it, I'm going to feel tired, sluggish. Is it worth it? Or do I stop because of how I feel? Not instead of, you know, this, like, I can't have it.
Amen. Yes. It's sort of like, you know, if you ate 15 slices of pizza, like by the, you know, 14th slice, you'd be like, I'm probably going to feel a little gross tomorrow. Maybe I don't want that. And it's that, you know, over time, that feeling of tomorrow, you're like, it's just not worth it. But you allow yourself to kind of slow down and be like, I am choosing to eat this way because this is the lifestyle I like versus I'm choosing this to eat this way only because of what it'll do on the scale.
Okay.
Do you want to talk for a second about mindset on your trip?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, great. So one of the things that can help is thinking ahead of time of like, what are going to be some special foods that you know you want to enjoy? Maybe there's local cuisine that you want to try some things. Maybe, you know, when you go to the airport, there's the special coffee thing that you get. Whatever it is, there, you know, think ahead of time of like, what do I know that I want to enjoy? And identify, yeah. Those are the foods that are special. Those are the foods that are worth it. And then you can ask yourself, okay, how much of this special thing would I love? And how much would be too much? How much would I regret the next day? How much would I regret, you know, the day I got back? I had a client once who went on a trip and she had like special breakfast and she came back and she was like, I loved the breakfast, but I ended up having it every single day. I wish I had thought ahead of time and just had it twice.
Yeah.
So how much do you want to have?
Yeah.
That's kind of part one. And okay. Part two is, what are the foods that are just going to be sort of there that you're going to be tempted to eat because they're in front of you, but they're not necessarily special. Like for me, cheese and crackers are those of like, I'm very tempted to eat cheese and crackers if they're present, but I'm not going to wake up tomorrow being like, man, those were the most amazing cheese and crackers I ever had in my whole life. You know, they're cheese and crackers.
Yeah.
And so those are the foods that you want to think about. Like those are not necessarily worth it foods. And then there's kind of a third category of things that you cannot necessarily anticipate, Someone says, hey, let's order dessert. Then you say, is this special?
Yeah.
Is this something that I can't necessarily get at home? Is this something that I could get at the grocery store anytime I want? Is this special? Same thing with before. Like, if yes, amazing. Enjoy it. But how much do you want to enjoy and how much would you regret tomorrow?
Right.
If it's not special, then you can be like, eh, I would rather save myself kind of for those things right. that are special.
Okay. Yeah. Luckily, where I'm going, it's really what, you know, they're known for is the fresh tropical fruit.
Oh, nice. So,
even though I'll probably end up eating it, not only when I'm actually hungry, just when they, you know, present it and it looks fresh, or it's healthy. So I don't really feel bad about eating that even when I'm not hungry. And so that to me thing is like, I love tropical fruit.
Yeah.
So
but it's
I know
interesting that
probably
you use the word
overeat on that, but I don't know that that's going to make a major change in the scale.
Right. But it is interesting that you use the word bad. Like, I don't feel bad about that. It's like, there isn't good or bad food. It's just food. And it's, am I choosing this because I like it? And I like the way I can live my life eating it and I can stop eating when I'm enough. Or am I eating this because it's a good food or a bad food?
Yeah, I have listened to a lot of books on tape from physicians and nutritionalists about plant-based whole food diets. And so I think some of the like bad and good comes from that.
Sure.
So I learned so much about the dangers to the body of processed foods and sugars that even without the idea of weight gain from it, there's this little bit of bad and good that I can't really get away from.
And we're all subject to it. Like, I have it too. I would encourage you, if you ever notice yourself in that good bad mentality, try and just tweak it towards like what feels good in my body. Tropical fruit probably feels pretty good, whereas a processed food is going to feel less good. So it's less about this is good for me or bad for me. It's more like, what do I want? What genuinely feels good?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Do you think I should be weighing myself daily like I have been? And I keep going back and forth because I feel like maybe by bringing the little travel scale and weighing myself, I'll feel reassured and feel more comfortable, you know, going out and eating some more special things versus
This sounds
catastrophizing
like
that I've gained a ton of weight and then depriving myself of food while I'm there.
This sounds like a special trip that you want to remember for a long time. So what would help you enjoy the trip the most? Bringing it or not bringing it?
I don't know. I think I'm tempted to bring it and then decide daily if I feel like weighing myself and then give myself, you know, the flexibility of my weight going up a few pounds, but, you know, maybe not going up more than 5 above my target weight. Because I know that's something that probably is fairly simple to take off later.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to do everything. I lost 25 pounds and my clothes now fit that never used to. I don't want to go back.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would just ask yourself that question of like, what's going to help me enjoy this trip as much as possible?
Okay.
Having that kind of knowledge and security that I have it with me or not worrying about it. You get to decide.
Okay.
How are you feeling?
I'm a little nervous for it. I kind of wish I was in my target range going on vacation instead of above it. Makes me a little nervous.
What would help you trust yourself?
I don't know. It's also new because I've never really dieted before. So all of this is kind of new. So it's just a new spot I'm in, but really my weight now is only less than a pound above what my target was before I gave it a range. I just below it, so I thought, oh, this is great, I've dropped below my goal weight, so I decided to make that part of the range, and maybe that's completely unrealistic.
I mean, that is something to consider in the maintenance course. There's a lesson on finding your happy weight, which is a combination of what is the number that my body feels good at and the lifestyle it takes to sustain it.
Yeah.
It's a combination. And you know, that can depend on basically what you feel is appropriate for your life. But I think in the short term, getting ready to go on this trip, the main thing to focus on is what's going to help me feel great in my body. When we're not thinking about restriction, we're not worrying about like what's good, what's bad. It's like, what's going to make me feel good about myself? Okay.
Okay. It's just hard because there's a lot of bathing suits on this trip. So that's where it hurt. I loved how I looked below the target weight, but I don't like the lifestyle to have that.
Yeah. I got one more question for you when you mentioned the bright bathing suit. 20 years from now, looking back on this vacation, what do you want to remember about it?
Just the fun that we had as a family.
Does the scale determine that?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
And I'm not going to be looking at it saying, oh, I see, that little roundness of the abdomen in the picture.
Well, I mean, most of us are prone to look at ourselves in the picture first and be like, oh, or like, ooh, that's natural. That's the first thought. But the second thought is you want to focus on the special memories of the trip. And so try and keep that in perspective.
Okay. Thank
Cool.
you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I appreciate you raising your hand. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. All right. Next we've got Marianne, who is a special friend of mine, one of my clients who I've talked to in the past. So Marianne's coming up. That was such a great call with Elizabeth about trips. Such a great question to think about is like 20 years from now, looking back, and what am I going to be, glad that I did? What am I going to wish that I didn't do? That's always a question to ask. Hey, Marianne.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. So happy to see you.
I'd only call in if it was you on the other side of that internet.
I feel so special. Thank you.
Thanks. This is a great call. And actually the chat, I don't know if you're seeing it, is like all about the trusting your body course. And it turns out my question is around that as well. So my accountability group and I are going through the accountability or through the Trusting Your Body course, and we're at the beginning talking about home base. And I say 50% of the time at least in above home base. It's probably more like 80% of the time. It's a lot. I really live up there. I almost never go below home base, which is fine with me. I don't want to do that, but I'd like to be a little bit more in the happy medium area. But the problem is, so I find I made some notes, that's why I keep looking down. So I'm always above home base. I'm always wanting to check things off my list. I always want to be busy. I'm not very good at resting. I'm not very good at sitting down. But I think this is my superpower because I get a lot done. Right. Like I feel like I'm a very productive person. So I don't want to not do that because I like that about myself. The problem in my household is that I very critical and not so nice about the other people in my house who don't live 80% of the time where I do. They live like maybe 10% of the time where I do. So, I mean, can you believe this? My husband can sit on the couch while and fall asleep while there's dishes in the sink. I mean, who does
The
that? I know.
nerve.
That? So, I have a story around being lazy. And I don't know where it comes from because it's not like my parents were super overachievers or anything like that. But I have this idea that if you're sitting down, you're lazy. I'm working on it. I know. I mean, look, I'm sitting down now, so so are you. So are
I
most
am.
of the people on this call. But you know what I mean. Like sitting down, I've done a lot of work on this. To be truly honest, I've done a lot of really good no BS work on this. I do transition time now when I come home from work before getting into the dinner and everything. So, I do recognize the value of it. And I started making my notes thinking, I don't know why I need to be coached on this because I don't really overeat over this. This is not something that causes me to overeat. And I'm making my going through my notes and everything. And then I said, you know what? I actually think I might overeat over this because when I get to the end of the day, when I do allow myself to sit on the couch and not do anything and not, you know, everybody's gone, people are off doing their own thing or in bed or whatever, that's when the urges to eat come up. And I've done enough no BS work to know that my mind goes quiet and that's when stuff pops up and I'm avoiding it all the other times by keeping busy probably. I don't know, maybe. But so how do I balance my superpower versus being a big jackass to my family? Because that's really what happens. And I found out yesterday or the day before that I think I'm passing this on to my daughter because she's the only one, there's only one other woman in the house, my 15-year-old, and she's the one who comes and stands by me. Mom, do you need any help? Can I help you clean the dishes? So she's picking up on that, and I don't want to duplicate a. I don't want to give her something that I don't want her to have.
So it's interesting. I could be wrong, but it sounds like you sort of like your story.
The lazy part or the busy part?
The busy part,
I
like,
love the busy part.
yeah, it sounds like I get shit done. This is good. And so, you know, as you said, you called it your superpower. I think where you tell me, but you may maybe where the kind of the challenge comes in is the if you're sitting down, you're lazy judgment. Does that resonate or not so much?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, very much so.
So really quickly, brief story. When my husband and I were getting married, we had to go to like the church, you know, pre-counseling thing. And I remember the priest said, okay, everybody raise a hands for the toilet paper. Did you put the toilet paper over the top or underneath the bottom? And I was like, over the top. I mean, everybody does that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And my husband was like, what are you talking about? And the priest was like, you know, basically there was one person in the couple who felt very strongly about it because this is a group thing. And there was one person in the couple who's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And the point was with the toilet paper, naturally the right way to do it is over the top, but like that was beside the point. The point was there's one person who cares about the thing, and there's one person who doesn't even know it's a thing. It's not like they don't care. Like if I said it really is important to me that you put the toilet paper over the top, my husband would be like, okay. But he was like, since you're the person that cares, it's your responsibility to either communicate that you care or to just take care of it. Granted, that can be taken too far. But in the case of the dirty dishes, like it's either like I'm the one that cares, so I get it done, or I care enough to communicate, hey, can we be a team here? And like, I cooked the dinner. Are you able to handle the dishes? That type of thing. What's up?
Right. Yeah. And I don't want to, you know, portray my husband as someone who never does dishes. I mean, we do have that agreement. When I cook, he cleans up the dishes generally. You know, I mean, it's not really that bad. It's not, there's no problem in our marriage about it or, you know, no problem with my children about it or anything like that. It's just, I think it's really, I want to be, I don't know if I want to not care. I don't think that's that, but I want to not get irritated about it. Like I want to just do the dishes, have it the way I want it, and not feel the irritation.
So what's your story that's making you irritated?
If I wasn't here, this house would fall apart.
Okay. But you are there.
Yeah, but what if I wasn't?
Then the house would fall apart. They would probably figure it out.
There are children here. I don't care about my husband. He can take care of himself. There are children and cats.
Okay, how would you feel about a little bit of a tough question? Where are you enabling them?
Oh, everywhere. I mean, up and down 24/7. Absolutely.
Okay.
I know that. I mean,
So that might explain why if you weren't there, the place would fall apart.
yes.
So again, like what's making you irritated?
Probably the mortal sin of no BS, which is I want them to know what I want without me telling them what I want, and they should want the same things I want in exactly the same way I want them. And all of this goes unsaid and just gets said with a slam door. That's how it works in my house.
We might have to write that one down. Okay. Well, as long as we've surfaced that and we know that they're supposed to read your mind, then that explains completely why you're irritated. But in all seriousness, like, is in like, are you actually wanting them to know what you want? Like, they should know? Or you're like, oh, we've communicated this, we've talked about it, and they're just not taking it as importantly as I do.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly communicated with my husband about this. I think he just he knows. I think I believe that it's our job as parents and as the adults in the house to model the behavior we'd like our children to have as adults growing up, right? So he can sit there and say, oh yes, we're a partnership and we share all the these responsibilities and stuff. But I think at the end of the day, he thinks, and I'm sure he would agree with me, I go out and I earn, the lion's share of the money, and you have a nice house. And if I don't jump up to do the dishes when you say so, I'm, I'm not your puppet. You can't make me do dishes. But then he complains about our son, who is sort of kind of lazy as well. So he's not modeling the behavior he wants the children to have.
Okay.
And that bothers me. Now, I could probably say that to him. That's a tough conversation. That's a really hard.
We may have talked about this in one of our coaching sessions, but one of the things that has been a beautiful opener in my marriage about like having a tough conversation, but in a way that's like, I could be wrong, is starting with the story I'm telling myself is fill in the blank, because that kind of it prefaces the conversation with, I want us to be on the same page. I don't know what's in your brain. Here's a window into my brain, and I realize that I may not be right. I may not have the right story. So the story I'm telling myself is, when you don't do the dishes, our son is watching you and he's learning from you that it's okay to just shirk off responsibility. And I know that's not what you want to teach him. And so I don't love this story. It causes me pain. It causes me grief. And I would love to have a different story. But what are you telling yourself when there's dirty dishes and you're on the couch watching the basketball game and, name of son is watching us? What's your story?
Yeah, I don't know what his story is. I think his story is they're definitely going to get done because I'm married to a superpower woman. Maybe.
Maybe.
So the question for me is, like, this is a great conversation, and you and I have talked about this before. Is the question, is the answer really that maybe I should, for myself, not care so much about those things? Is that an okay answer? Is it okay to be lazy, at least according to my, perverted view of that word? I mean, is it okay?
I mean, in my view, 100%. But it doesn't matter what I think. It matters what you think.
I don't, I'd have to try it out. It doesn't feel, I'm not big on the touchy feeling, like how does that feel in your body? But that feels really uncomfortable.
I don't, so I'm going to ask you the same question I asked earlier, and I don't know how this is going to land because it's a very different scenario. But like 20 years from now, looking back on your day-to-day life, what are you going to be glad you cared about?
No, that's good. That's actually good. I'm gonna care about that my kids knew that we have family dinner together and there's good conversation, and that they're loved and there's a home, a happy, caring home for them. They won't remember there's no that there were dirty dishes in the sink, I'm sure. And I don't want to remember that either.
Paper plates is not exactly eco-friendly, but it might solve an issue.
No, I don't think I believe it.
You're like, no, teacups.
Exactly. Thank you. I just needed to talk that through a little bit. That's, this is a longer, bigger story for me, but it was interesting that it came up with the, oh, well, I don't eat over this. This is something else. This doesn't have anything to do with weight loss, but I think it really does. And we didn't even really talk about that. We don't need to, because I know there's other people waiting. We can talk about it another time.
I think that in the bottom line is like you actually mostly like 80 to 90% love your story about productivity and laziness. And the only part of it where it gets you tripped up is where you're judging other people based on your own rules.
Yeah, and that's right. That's 100% right. Thank you.
Thank you too. So good to see you. Thank you for
Thank
being here
you.
tonight. All
Bye.
righty. Bye.
Thank you.
All right. I think we have time for one more 8 minutes. Joyce, if you're willing to hop up and chat with me, we can have a 8-minute-ish conversation. Looks like the chat has just been going crazy. I'm going to have to catch up with it later. And Joyce declined, so maybe I can catch up on the chat right now. So if Joyce is not interested in coming up, if there's one other person that might be interested in a quick coaching, or we can wrap up early, or I could just riff, I could look at the Q&A. Oh, here we go. Joyce has said, yes, this is a good point. I just uncovered some black and white thinking. It's good to restrict if it's not making me feel good or create results that I want to have. So it sounds like Joyce and Coach Ashley may have been going back and forth in the Q&A about all or nothing thinking. You know, it's interesting. I did a Facebook Live about this earlier today. And while I'm just chit-chatting, if somebody else wants to raise their hand real quick, please feel free. But so let's talk about all or nothing thinking, black and white thinking. So, number one, it's not your fault. Like, there's at least two reasons why it is baked into our upbringing that we automatically are going to have all or nothing black and white thinking. Number one is our society. You know, our society is very kind of goal driven. When we go to school, we're like, get the gold star, go for the A, be the good girl. That's what we're raised to become. And a lot of us, not everyone, but a lot of us are kind of people pleasers, and we want to please the authority, whether that's mom or the teacher or whatever. And so we want to get it right because that pleases whomever the authority figure is in our little young brains. So that's number one, why all or nothing black and white thinking is not your fault. Number two is diets. Hello. Diets say follow these simple 7 steps and you'll lose weight. So number one, they say it's simple. Okay, it might be simple, but it's not easy. Number two, they never tell us what to do when, the dog pooped on the floor and I had a long day and my mom just called with a diagnosis and like your 7 simple steps are out the freaking window because I just want some chocolate. Those diets don't tell you what to do. And so I'm like, well, if the steps were simple, but I can't follow them, well, I must be the idiot. And so I'm the problem. And so it's like I either am on and I'm good, I'm the good girl, or I'm off and I'm bad. So we all have some black or white, all or nothing thinking, and it's not your fault. That being said, it really gets in the way of our progress. So the Facebook Live I was doing about this earlier today was about kind of when we're looking at our habit tracker or the my meal plan for the day, and I'm doing my assessment. I don't want to do my assessment because I was on plan until, 3:30, and then I went off plan and I feel bad. And then the shame storm comes up in my head of like, oh, why did I do that? And yada, yada, yada. And I want you to kind of pause there and think about a kindergartner. And so a kindergartner is trying to learn their numbers. And if a kindergartner is trying to figure out how to put the numbers together, and this is something they're kind of learning for the first time. How are they going to respond, and how are they going to learn best? What sort of learning environment will a kindergartner learn best in? Probably one where the teacher is nurturing and kind and patient and saying, "Oops, you missed this number. I wonder why. Let's get curious. What happened here?" Or like, "How do we make these numbers fit?" Versus the teacher who is like, "That's wrong. I can't believe you did that. Johnny over there is getting his numbers right. So what's wrong with you? These are really simple and you're not getting your numbers right. What's your problem?" Obviously, a 6-year-old kindergartner is not going to learn too well in the judgmental environment. Well, guess what your habit brain is like? A kindergartner. And so, though it's not your fault that we have this kind of all or nothing black and white thinking, if you want to move forward in your weight loss journey, it is imperative to try and treat yourself and your habit brain like you would talk to a kindergartner with that kind, gentle, nurturing voice, because your habit brain is basically, the maturity level of a 6-year-old. It's, we talked about safety a lot on this call. Like, our habit brain is about safety and feeling okay and feeling loved. And if you're judging yourself, that is shutting down any learning. That is shutting down any progress. So if you're going to learn, hey, I went off plan at 3:30. I wonder why. What was going on? Well, the kids got home from school and I was feeling pretty tired and the snacks were already there and I just wasn't thinking. Oh, well, okay, maybe I could make an adjustment tomorrow. That's going to help you make progress, just like the kindergartner is going to help you learn that, 5 + 5 = 10, not 11. Then you're going to move forward. And so that's my little bit of minor teaching there here as we wrap up. So all or nothing thinking, not your fault, but try and treat yourself with the kindness and loving gentleness of a kindergartner, because that's basically what your habit brain is like. And if you want any chance to learn and make progress, you gotta be kind to yourself. That judgmental shame talk is just shutting you down. So that is what I've got for you tonight. Everyone, thank you so much for joining me. It's been so great to be with you this evening. Oh, just all the hugs, all the loves, the Care Bear stares and, ooey gooey smiles. Love you all. Happy No BS night to you, and have a great week. And reach out to me and ask coaches anytime. We can be besties. All right. Talk to you later. Bye.